It's now my personal privilege to introduce our first witness. My association with Brad Marcus started 2 years ago this week when I received a letter from him which made a tremendous impact. And I'm just going to share a few passages from that letter with you. Dear Senator Mack, I am not an activist member of any organization. What I am is a man who has suddenly found his life affected by a force beyond his control, and I must now desperately do something about it. My son, Jarrett, is 4.5 years old. He is dying. Jarrett's little brother, Quinn, is 3. He is dying too. Only their brother, Cole, who is 5, has been spared the ravages of a rare genetic disorder called AT. I have no scientific or medical credentials. That was then. I am a businessman with an MBA from Harvard. My wife, Vicki, and I are writing in hopes that you or your staff can somehow help us. Brad went on to explain that AT kids first lose neuromuscular function, then their immune system, and eventually cancer-like symptoms set in. The children are usually in wheelchairs by age 10. They usually don't live into their 20s. At the time they first wrote to me, Brad and Vicki had already founded the AT Children's Project, organized a scientific advisory board, raised $450,000, and were about to award the first set of research grants. They asked for my help in getting scientists at NIH to devote some time and resources into AT research. Working with my colleagues on the Appropriations Committee, I was able to get report language in the fiscal year 1995 Labor HHS bill encouraging NIH to get involved. Today, Brad will tell us about what his family has been through in search for the gene which might help his children and others with AT. He will also tell us a little about an interesting discovery made while searching for the AT gene. This morning, we will hear a lot about DNA, genes, enzymes, genetic risks, and other technical terms. These are important to discuss, but we must never lose sight of what we are really talking about today is ourselves, our families, our friends, and our loved ones. So, Brad, it's a great deal of pleasure that I welcome you this morning. We look forward to hearing your story.
Thank you, Senators, for letting me come here today and speak to you. In particular, Senator Mack, thanks a lot for your support these years. One of the things on my checklist to learn about was the science, but another part was to learn how biomedical research is funded, and you and your staff have been fantastic at teaching me that. You also mentioned that, both of you mentioned that because of cancer touching your families, you have a particularly personal perspective of it. And just for a few minutes this morning, I hope that I can also make you think personally about this very rare disease that's affected our family. My name is Brad Marcus. I'm from Boca Raton, Florida. I am here only because I have this genetic disease that's affected our family. I think what's really important to emphasize to everyone this morning is that this can happen to anyone. Dr. Collins will probably tell us, as he always does, that 4 or 5 genetic defects are in everyone's DNA, and that they can surface at any time. Not to mention the fact that it can happen much later in life, so you're never home free. So while hearing a story about a very rare disease and its sad story can be something you can turn off, you have to keep in mind that everyone has genetic defects. We didn't know we did, but just 2 years ago, as you heard, my wife and I discovered that our two sons have AT. It's called ataxia telangiectasia. Impossible to pronounce and unknown to most people.
I was going to say, you want to try that one more time for us?
Ataxia telangiectasia. Ataxia refers to a lack of muscle control. Telangiectasias are these little spider veins that develop on the surface of the eye or the skin. We thought we had a perfect family, and we thought we did everything right. And we thought we were building a perfect future. And suddenly, when a disease like this attacks and physicians tell you that there's nothing you can do, you realize that you really don't have control over everything. AT is an inherited disease. It affects all races, all sexes, all countries, all ethnic origins equally. It's recessive, which means that both my wife and I had to be carriers of one copy of the damaged gene, and that even then, by marrying and having kids, we had a 1 in 4 chance of having a child with it. Just so happened we got particularly unlucky, and the first 2 out of 3 children were affected. I mentioned that I try to imagine if senators were to have AT in their family, and this is truly something that I've imagined many, many times. I try to imagine senators. I try to imagine famous people. It's horrible to say, but there's no doubt in my mind that if someone famous or powerful tomorrow were affected with this disease, we would all be watching TV movies about it, and there'd be much more support for it. So this morning, just try to imagine that you yourself are in my shoes. So you have this disease. It combines the most known aspects of muscular dystrophy, cancer, and cystic fibrosis. The kids appear normal when they're born. You think that they're perfectly healthy, but usually around the age of 2, they begin to become wobbly, lose their balance, have a little bit of slurred speech. And that continues. It's relentless. And eventually, the children are in wheelchairs by about age 8 or 10. You sometimes have involuntary movements. The muscle control continues to deteriorate so that by early teens, frequently, they lose control of their eyes. What's particularly brutal about the disease, in some ways a blessing, but sometimes very brutal, is that the IQ is never affected. They maintain their intelligence. So they're trapped in the body that's letting them down. They lose opportunity. And what I hear most from AT fathers who have sons with AT is that they hate seeing their sons lose their dignity. Besides all this neurological deterioration, the other thing about AT is that the kids are about 1,000 times more likely than normal kids of developing childhood cancers, particularly leukemias and lymphomas. And they're also hypersensitive to radiation. The way this was discovered was in the 60s when several kids who were misdiagnosed were treated with radiation therapy, and the kids a couple of kids died from radiation. They're extremely sensitive to it. As if all that isn't enough, about 80% of the kids with AT have immune problems, so that the second most common cause of death besides the cancer is respiratory failure due to a common infection that becomes a raging pneumonia. And there's some other side effects too, like premature aging and diabetes that's common. So for my wife and me, this is not imagining, unfortunately. For my wife and I, this is totally real. Jarrett now is 6 and Quinn is 4. Interesting thing to point out is that it took almost 2 years just to be diagnosed properly. And we visited some of the best neurologists in the world. But with rare diseases, they frequently go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. The boys are still young. They're still lively. If they were here today, they would cause a ruckus in this room. And they're still very much brothers that love each other. I'd like to show you a picture of them. Before you get to the scientific exhibits, I thought you should see.
Oh my, they're handsome.
So we didn't know it then, but the boys in the 2 dark blue shirts are homozygotes, or they have both bad copies of the gene. Jared and Quinn have the disease, and Cole in the middle is their older brother, who is a carrier but does not have the disease.
Why don't you let the rest of the...
So that's Jared, Cole, and Quinn. We always imagine them growing up becoming strong men. This is the kind of picture that I always imagined holding someday when they're much older, next to a picture, 20 years later or something, or you show before and after. And we still hope that this can be possible. Everyone responds to crises differently, and as you heard, we started a nonprofit organization called the AT Children's Project. We've tried to be very smart about the way we've started it. We studied a lot of models of other fine organizations. We realized that we had to stretch the dollar as far as possible. We sought advice and got it from a lot of bright scientists and researchers, and continue to push that way. We, I think, have a sense of urgency that most people pick up on pretty quickly. And if someone suggests that we have a meeting in the next couple of years, we usually like to plan it in the next couple of weeks. Another thing I'd like to point out today is that when a family like ours is diagnosed in the United States today with a rare disease, I think we always assume that someone's taking care of it. that there must be someone working on it. You tend to trust the system. You believe that there's a General Schwarzkopf who's fighting for your cause, and there must be people who have been working on this for years. You can't possibly fall between the cracks. And what we found instead was, in fact, it wasn't so, people weren't being so attentive to it. And we didn't know what kind of people were working on it, if they had adequate resources. And that's probably what prompted us most to step in and do something. We definitely were not looking for a hobby. We weren't affluent Americans who wanted to feel good about being successful, so they wanted to do something touchy-feely. No, we only did this for one reason, and that was because no one else was doing it. As it turned out, when we started talking to all the scientific advisors and establishing our strategies, it turned out that for this rare disease, some of the typical approaches to drug discovery or to solving the problem were not at all feasible. Most of the drugs in a drugstore, as I understand it, are developed by drug companies with basically random trials, screening thousands and thousands of compounds, trying to come up with something that works. For example, this morning I obviously have a cold, and most of the cold medicines were developed by large drug companies with lots of capital, just trying lots of different compounds, and if they find one that seems to work, then they make sure it's safe. In our case, with a little rare disease and a little limited funds we were able to raise, there's no way that we can find a drug that way. The only way to find it is the way that's talked about so much these days, and it's rationally figuring out what is really going wrong in the system and trying to solve it. AT is a very difficult disease and a very difficult problem to solve because there's so many things going wrong. It affects so many systems of the body, the cancer, immune systems, neurological systems. So the answer was to find the gene that causes the disease. But that's the only thing that all scientists knew about, was that this one gene, when passed down, would cause this brutal disease. So our goal and what we did with our funding was to support research to identify the gene that causes AT. Most of you know about 3 months ago in June, one of the researchers we supported, Dr. Yosef Shilo in Israel, came to NIH and together with a collaborator, Dr. Francis Collins, announced the discovery of the AT gene. For AT families like mine, it's a wonderful piece of hope. It's not a cure, but it's the first step toward really being able to figure out what's going wrong. Already in 3 months since then, they've been able to find the similar version of the gene in yeast, which are studied a lot, in fruit flies, which are studied a lot, and even in mice. And on top of that, by looking at the sequence of the gene, you can have a better idea already of what its function probably is. Now more than ever, it seems to be related to controlling cell growth and differentiation, which is really makes a lot of sense in light of the cancer aspect. So the great news was that the gene was found, and right now there's lots of research going on. I'll be happy to talk to anyone afterwards about. But one of the great things that's happening is that they're trying to knock this gene out right here in Bethesda, in mice. And hopefully by January or February, we'll have a strain of mice that have both copies of the AT gene knocked out. And if we're lucky at all, that those mice will mimic the syndrome or the symptoms seen in AT patients. If we had mice today that had the disease my sons have, then right away we can begin trying drugs or interventions or many things that might just work. In addition to that, you can do a lot of things to these mice to figure out what's really going on at every stage of their lives that you can't do to kids. So that's the great news about finding the gene for AT patients. There's another aspect of finding the gene, and that is there's this other part of AT that actually gets a lot more attention than our little rare disease that affects kids. And that's that carrying one copy of this gene, being a carrier, as my wife and I obviously are because we were able to have kids with AT, being a carrier causes you to have a higher incidence of cancer. Now, what rate of incidence is still being debated? When this was just a rare disease and there was no real easy way to get a definite answer, as you can imagine, there were only a few groups studying this. One particular researcher in the US and a couple overseas. Their evidence seems to indicate that cancer is at a higher rate in carriers. Nothing like the kids who have the disease, but nevertheless, if there's this gene in a carrier state, unknown to people, causes them to be 3 or 4 times more likely to develop certain cancers, That's significant. What else is significant is that this gene in a carrier state appears to be much more prevalent than most people would expect. In fact, the number usually thrown out is about 1% of the general population may be carriers of this gene. If that's true, you know, the numbers would indicate at least a couple million people in the United States alone are carriers of this gene. And if in fact they have a higher rate of cancer, and that's something that we need to get to the bottom of and know right away. Luckily, I've already had some very good meetings with Dr. Klausner and Dr. Collins, and plans are underway now for some more meetings and some strategies to ramp up the research to get an answers to these questions right away. But the other thing that is also possible with this being a carrier of this gene is that there is some evidence that perhaps carriers are also a little more sensitive to radiation than normal people. And for example, in vitro, in a laboratory, the cells of AT carriers, like mine, are on the average more sensitive than normal people. There's some overlap, so it's tough, but it does look like it's true. And if this is true, the big significance, of course, is that we could identify people when they're about to have cancer radiotherapy, and we could know if they're carriers that they're going to be more sensitive to radiation than if they're not carriers. And there's one more home run opportunity that we have, and I've talked to people at Johns Hopkins and some other places about this. There are cancer researchers now who are very interested in our gene, though they have no interest at all in helping the kids with the disease. What they're hoping to do is to take this gene and knock out both copies of it in special tissues, for example, in tumors. Because one thing that's known is when you have both copies knocked out, your cells are much more sensitive to radiation. So imagine if tomorrow you developed a tumor, a cancer tumor, and they had a way to make your tumor think it had AT. Then they would have a way to make your tumor more sensitive to radiation, and then there would be a way to make cancer therapy more effective. So there's a lot of excitement that comes, and I think this demonstrates that sometimes research on a very rare disease has some bigger payoffs. There's also some scary parts, and I think that's probably what today's meeting is about, and that's that as a carrier now, if the evidence shows that I'm more prone to develop cancer, what are people going to do with this information? And I mentioned that I have mixed feelings about this, because on the one hand, I'm thrilled that AT, my son's disease, is going to finally receive a lot of attention and a lot of scientific research, because we need it, and the cancer aspect causes this to happen. On the other hand, I'm not too thrilled with the idea that I might be more prone to develop cancer, and even more, I'm not too thrilled with the idea that I can see and I can understand how a lot of people might want to discriminate against me because I'm more likely to develop cancer. So, I'm a businessman, and I understand completely that if I were running this an insurance company where you do everything based on calculated risks and averages, and you had a way to identify a certain customer base or population that had a higher rate of cancer, that I want to know that. I understand that completely, and even if I wanted to be a good guy and not discriminate, I also understand that in a competitive world, I have to worry that my competing insurance company might have that information and might use it. So I think what my hope would be that you senators would come up with laws that would even the playing ground, make it possible to prevent discrimination based on this kind of information, but making the rules the same for everyone so that there isn't that competitive business reason to do it. So that's it today. I guess what I want to say one more time is just to remind you that what happened to me can happen to anyone. And while today a lot of people are still learning about the genetics, please keep in mind that as the research progresses, so many more genetic defects are going to be unveiled. And as each of those is unveiled, you're probably going to have more and more meetings just like this to figure out what to do about them. Again, I'd like to show you a picture of my boys. And just in closing, mention one more thing that some people fear about our government. That is that regulations or laws can slow things down. And I want more than anybody in this room not to have my insurance cut off because I'm an AT carrier. But even more so, I don't want any of this fear about the genetic information being wrongly used to prevent biomedical research from proceeding at the fastest pace it can because in the end, the most important thing to me is that the research finds a cure for my sons. Thanks.
Brad, thank you very much for sharing that very personal story with us. I think you were able to connect with everybody, not only in this room, but anybody who would be listening or might have an opportunity at some point to see this hearing this morning. You have touched deeply the feelings and emotions of at least these two United States senators, and I think that we can speak for the other 98 that we want to be helpful. We do not want to stand in the way. We want to encourage research, and we want to thank you for helping us focus on this issue. There are several questions that come to my mind as you went through that story, having to do with testing. At some point, I assume you found that there was some place to go to test for the AT gene. Is that right?
Well, actually, to be diagnosed did not require genetic testing at all. They use other laboratory markers, certain things in your blood that are elevated, and certain things about your neurological presentation. So it's a very good question, though, because actually we get phone calls all the time now from physicians who have borderline unclear cases, and in the worst way, they want to use the new genetic information to confirm the diagnosis. The problem is for me right now is I can tell them that it's scientifically possible, but there aren't too many places where it can be done.
Where can it be done?
It can only be done in research laboratories that have all the tools in place because they use that technique to find the gene or to study the protein now. Actually, right now that's one of my top priorities is to figure out where it could be done where on a larger scale where it wouldn't be a burden to a research lab and where they have the facilities to provide this service to families, but families want to know it to confirm diagnosis of their kids. They also want to know it if they have aunts and uncles who want to have children and want to know if they're carriers or not.
Now, I assume you're, and I know you're aware that there's quite a discussion going on in the scientific community and now just beginning to take place for the rest of us. Some believe that testing shouldn't take place until, in essence, there is a cure for a particular disease. Why don't you share with us your thoughts about that?
Well, another interesting question about that is who has the right to decide whether that, you know. I've had a lot of doctors and others tell me what their answer is for that, and I don't know whose decision it is to decide. I think there are several reasons for, in our case, why we want to be able to do genetic testing. One is to confirm a diagnosis. One is for prenatal diagnosis. Families who've had one child with this disease want more than anything to have a healthy child. Regardless of our position on that, you know, do they have a right to at least have access to the genetic testing? And then the third thing is, if you want to know if you're a carrier, because you already have a reason to believe that, you know, someone in your family's had a child with this, and you want to prevent that from happening. And then the fourth reason is if you have this fear about cancer susceptibility. Okay, I think the fourth one is what Dr. Klausner and Dr. Collins will say. It's premature to provide testing to everyone because we're not absolutely positive that you can develop cancer for it. And also, we have to make a plan of what you're going to tell people to do about it once they get that information. Well, but to rule against genetic testing across the board is also, you know, I think, myopic.
The issue, let me just see if I can follow a couple different points there. You made raised the question, really, who has the right to decide. Why don't you share some of your thoughts about who has the right to decide?
Well, this actually surfaced because we've discussed a lot about, I mean, there are many researchers who contact our organization today wanting to get their hands on AT families around the country, because if you want to get to the bottom of this cancer rate of carriers, the best way is to go to known carriers first, and those are family members of AT patients. So they've come to us to try to get access to all those families. And we've mentioned that AT families would be particularly willing to cooperate if, as a side benefit, they could be told what their carrier status is. They want to know. Now, some of them want to know for reasons I mentioned about having kids with it, but others want to know because they just want to know if there's a possibility that they have a likelihood of cancer. And if the research hasn't definitely, you know, without debate, proven that there absolutely is an increased rate of cancer and there are things you can do to screen for it if you knew you were. So what if there isn't? If there's suspicion that there is, maybe those AT families still deserve to know, you know? And I think most physicians would say, no, we mustn't tell them. They can't handle it. They need genetic counseling. We'll give them genetic counseling, but I'm not so sure that anyone gets to kind of play God and say, we're not going to tell people information, even though we're going to find it out for our studies. We're not going to tell them themselves until we have more information we can tell them. The jury's still out even in my heart on this. Maybe the people who have a lot more experience breaking news to people about genetic susceptibility will have different points of view. But I think everyone has the right to privacy, and I think, but I kind of resent some people taking a stance that they can understand and comprehend the adequacy or inadequacy of the information, but this family member can't. Mm-hmm.
I suspect as we go through this that we're going to find that there are going to be there are going to be many different cases, many different circumstances, because just in just this short discussion this morning, we can see many different circumstances. And I suspect that there are going to be different norms that are going to be created for the different circumstances. It may very well be that there ought to be available to families such as yours that are trying to pursue issues related specifically with AT. That ought to be testing, ought to be available, and so forth. There really is a real question of, when you get into the issue about the cancer aspect of it, because really, it, and in some ways, this is similar to the BRCA1 gene, where we know a lot, but what we probably have found out at this point is that there is a lot more we don't know. I guess from my own perspective, I come down on this question, though, who has the right to make that determination about the testing. Frankly, to where it really comes down to me at this point is it's really up to the individual or individual families. I think Dr. Collins and I had a conversation a year or so ago when I raised the question after the P16 gene was discovered. That's the melanoma gene, if I've got that right. With my brother Michael having died of melanoma, with the melanoma having been taken off my side 6 years ago, does it make sense that I test for the melanoma gene, or should my son or daughter be tested for the melanoma gene? The question then becomes, well, if we do that, what have we learned and what have they learned? I'm not real sure the answers to those yet, but I think that's exactly the purpose of these hearings today. And I want to thank you, Brad, for being here and sharing with us your experience and your thoughts and your ideas. And I think that in the end, they're going to turn out to be very, very helpful. Senator Feinstein, let me turn to you.
Thank you very much. I think if I understood your answer to the question that Senator Mack was just asking about who really has the right, what you're saying is the individual has the right. I suppose if you're 75 or 80 years old, there's not going to be maybe a lot you're going to do about whatever your genetic makeup is. But I think when you're a young person and you're faced with decisions, it becomes very important to know what some of these things are. Would you agree with that? I mean, for you, it's important in
people.
Your decision whether to have children and more children or not.
No, for those other reasons, other than the cancer risk, the other reasons I mentioned within AT families, I think absolutely people have a right. If they have AT child in their family somewhere, they have a right to know if they're a carrier and they could have a kid too and all that. But on the cancer risks, if the jury's still out and we still have to wait a few years to get to the bottom of whether there really is a cancer risk and there are things, or whether or not there are things you can do about it, some people say we shouldn't yet provide carrier testing for family members or for even the general population because there's nothing, it's premature, it would be misleading, it would lead people to think there was some reason to know it, and maybe there isn't a reason to know it yet. So So I can understand that. I you know, if, to tell you the truth, what I would like best is that we just work harder and faster to find out if there's significance there and if there's something you can do about it, and then we won't have to have this debate. We'll just tell people whether they're carriers and also tell them what to do with it.
Tell me one thing, if you will. What is the name of your foundation and what is the address, just in case people want to help?
It's the AT Children's Project, 21645 Cartagena, Cartagena Drive. It's in Boca Raton, Florida, 33428. Thanks for asking.
Well, let me just wish you all the best and all the luck and science can bring to bear. You have a beautiful family. Enjoy it. And if there's certainly anything I can do to help, and I know that goes for Senator Mack as well, we will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.